A scavenging bear in Skagway is killed. And a different comparison for the ballot measure to legalize marijuana. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. We're a few days late in getting you caught up on news from the last Skagway Assembly meeting, but the biggest development at that October 20th meeting was the Assembly giving the go-ahead for geotechnical and environmental studies to begin at the port. The work is part of the Legacy Harbor Contamination Mitigation Program in anticipation of the Gateway Project port development work and is estimated to cost nearly $1 million, according to the engineering firm KPFF. The company was selected by the municipality for the Gateway contract. The environmental work comes as an amendment to the original contract, but not as a surprise, although Assemblymember Gary Hansen was surprised at the price tag.
I agree with you in that we all knew that this geotech was coming in this project. I don't think all of us knew that it was going to cost over $1 million. I feel nervous about just going ahead and signing off for $1 million without actually checking with another company to see what it would cost.
Hansen also asked if the municipality should go ahead with the environmental work when it doesn't yet have site control from White Pass to go ahead with the Gateway project. The municipality and White Pass are currently in negotiations for a new tidelands lease that would allow the town site control for the port project. That lease then has to go to a public vote. But Mayor Mark Schaefer said the remediation has to take place no matter what happens with the lease. The results from the studies will be of use to the municipality whether the port project goes ahead in the near future or in years to come.
I would hope we can get this moving on. I really do. This is an important piece. It's going to be good information for us regardless of what happens with the vote. We're not wasting money, and in fact, if we don't get on with it, we may lose our money.
The money Schaefer refers to is $10 million appropriated by the state for the Gateway project. It has to be used within a certain amount of time before the allocation goes away. Another $1.5 million was appropriated by the state legislature for remediation work, and Skagway voters previously authorized a total of $5 million in bonds for the project. Assemblymember Spencer Morgan also expressed concern at the money amount for the geotechnical studies, but noted that about a third of the work is being done in the small boat harbor. That's being included in order to take advantage of the equipment and manpower. About $120,000 of the cost will also be reimbursed by the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority because some of the work will be done for that agency. KPFF outlines the work for the environmental studies, which will include drilling core samples and lab testing. The project will use several contractors to complete the work. The drilling is planned to take place before the end of the year, with lab testing to take several more months. The Assembly approved the amendment. With only four members present for the meeting, Hansen said he would reluctantly support the amendment, otherwise the motion would have been voted down. Also at the meeting, Hansen said he will work with the Public Safety Commission, which he chairs, to brainstorm next steps for a new public safety facility. Skagway voters recently narrowly approved a $12 million bond to fund a new building, but a second ballot question, which would have increased the summer sales tax by 1% to pay for the bond, failed. Hansen said some options include bonding for less than the $12 million and continuing searching for funding elsewhere.
Now we're looking at if we actually went out and took the whole $12 million bond that we're now authorized to do, we could be putting the people of Skagway in obligation for over $650,000 a year for 30 years. And that's kind of a scary proposition and a big budget item to have to deal with for the next 30 years.
Mayor Schaefer said the Finance Committee may also have some ideas for how to move forward, but he also encouraged Hansen and his committee to continue developing design plans. The Assembly is also looking into options to make sure lunch for Skagway seniors continue. The seniors meet in the Big Dippers building now that it's fall time, but because there isn't an industrial kitchen in the facility, the Catholic Senior Services lunch program is operated through the Presbyterian Church. John Jackson with the church let the Assembly know that the program needs financial help to defray utility costs in order to continue providing the lunch program. The Assembly was supportive of making sure the program continues and is working up a solution to vote on next meeting, but Assemblymember Tim Cochran also suggested the municipality revisit the idea of installing an industrial kitchen in the Dippers building. A brown bear was killed early Tuesday morning in Skagway after weeks of the bear getting into trash and rummaging around town. Skagway Police Chief Ray Leggett says it's clear the male brown bear is the same one seen on an almost daily basis lately, getting into trash, knocking over dumpsters and barbecue grills, and at least on one occasion trying to get into a freezer. Several times police officers used cracker rounds or rubber bullets to scare the bear away from town. Leggett says a licensed hunter shot the bear Tuesday just outside city limits near the mountainside, and that the kill was a legal hunt and legal take of game. The chief said he had given a heads up to a few local hunters about the bear, asking for their assistance if they noticed the bear outside of town. Leggett said he trusted the hunters he contacted to quickly kill the bear while making sure the surroundings were a safe distance from residents and people. Leggett later on Tuesday announced on Facebook that the bear had been dispatched. More than 60 comments appeared on the notice within an hour. Some residents commented that they were saddened the bear was killed but glad to be rid of the worry that went along with a roaming bear. Others were unhappy at the news, wishing the bear could have been relocated or that residents would have worked harder to secure trash and dumpsters to deter the bear. Leggett also noted that city ordinance requires residents not to leave trash outside or unsecured until 4 a.m. on pickup day. And that wasn't usually the case with the trash the bear meddled with, he said. We're continuing our election coverage with a look at candidates and issues on next Tuesday's ballot. And the most contentious one is the ballot measure asking voters whether marijuana should be legalized. The confusion is in the details of the measure. Opponents and proponents disagree on what passing the measure would mean for certain regulations. Oregon voters are facing a similar ballot question this year. And while some legalization advocates use Colorado's new pot law as an example for Alaska, as KPLU's Gabriel Spitzer reports, Alaska and Oregon's ballot measures are actually more like Washington's new state law.
For states thinking of legalizing pot, there are lots of ways to do it. But for starters, there are two basic options on the menu, Colorado and Washington. Colorado is seen as having moved quickly, either nimble or reckless, depending on your point of view. Washington is seen as the slower one, either careful or ponderous. These are simplifications, of course, but which one appeals to our northwestern neighbors?
Here in Oregon, you know, I think most people realize Washington has been a success.
The Washington experience may provide a better model for Alaska than Colorado.
That's Anthony Johnson, chief petitioner of Oregon's measure, and Tim Hinterberger, chair of Alaska's. Both measures share some features with Washington's law. They each empower the State Liquor Commission to set most of the rules. They create licenses for growers and retailers, and they both ban consumption in public. But the two states break from Washington in key ways, too. Take the tax structure. Washington taxes marijuana at about 44% of the cost. Alaska, on the other hand, would slap a flat $50 tax on each ounce, says Tim Hinterberger.
So one good thing about having a fixed tax per ounce rather than, say, a percentage of the retail cost is that people wouldn't have to guess how revenues might decline as the price decreases.
Oregon's is even lower, at $35 an ounce. Both say that will help keep prices low enough to compete with black market dealers and avoid Washington buyers' sticker shock. Opponents say the low taxes are a drawback. Josh Marquis is a volunteer spokesman for Oregon's No on Measure 91 campaign, and he points to other ways his state's measure strays from Washington's approach.
In Oregon, you can have 8 ounces, and you can possess a pound of edibles, and 72 ounces of marijuana liquids, and you can possess an ounce of oil, and you can grow 4 plants per household. We're talking about a staggering amount of weed.
And there's nothing in Oregon's measure, or Alaska's, that explicitly bans products that may appeal to children, as Washington does.
Pot tarts, gummy bears, things that are clearly designed to attract children. I mean, that's what Joe Camel's all about.
Colorado has gotten lots of ink for its loosely regulated edibles, but it recently moved to restrict them even more than Washington does. And it's worth noting, Washington's tight regulations on edibles weren't in the initiative either. They came from the Liquor Board's rules. But the perception remains Colorado is the Wild West compared with slow and steady Washington. In Oregon, Anthony Johnson says opponents of his measure hold up Colorado as the cautionary tale.
The opposition doesn't mention Washington that often and tends to hold up Colorado as the boogeyman. And I think that has come about because Washington has taken such a deliberative, thoughtful approach.
This seems to be the case in Alaska, too.
Available stone driving would increase, and we need only to look at Colorado.
What's happening in Colorado is not what we signed up for.
The government knows that two people have died in Colorado after consuming edibles.
The target on Colorado may have more to do with how far along it is rather than how permissive. But it seems clear that backers in Alaska and Oregon are quicker to draw parallels to Washington's law than Colorado's. And that makes sense, says Oregon's Anthony Johnson. All three Northwestern states share some political DNA and similar attitudes about pot.
Alaska actually legalized, you know, personal use in the 70s. Oregon was the first state to decriminalize small amounts. We've all been states that have been at the forefront of marijuana law reform.
Polls show close contests in Alaska and Oregon, but if both measures were to pass, the Northwestern U.S. would cement its status as the broadest outpost of pot country in America. I'm Gabriel Spitzer.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friednauer. Special thanks to Gabriel Spitzer for help with this report. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.